All right, we're talking about the significance of matzah, and of course the significance of chametz. What's unique about chametz is that the stringencies that are associated with it. As we saw in the Rambam, there's so many different prohibitions pertaining to chametz. Not just that you can't eat it, but that you can't possess it. And the idea, this is from the Chachamim, but that you have to search for it, and then you have to destroy it. And according to the mitzvah d'oraisa, you have to nullification of the chametz. So that, also the fact that it's more serious. Normally, forbidden foods are not prohibited in a minimal amount. It's called a mashu. With chametz on Pesach, there's no bittul. There's no nullification. That is, any amount would create a prohibition. So, chametz is much more severe than the other prohibited foods. Like chazir, things that we normally, most Jews have a taboo-ish kind of an attitude towards. And chametz, it's very strange, because, interestingly enough, it's the same kind of food that's permitted all year round. It's going to be very, very difficult to find something, although people do. People have this taboo-ish kind of an attitude towards chametz on Pesach. But it's very hard to maintain that there's something unique about chametz. I mean, it's the same chametz you're eating all year round. So what is the idea of the severities? The prohibition for eating chametz on Pesach is kares, which is basically the loss of the soul, the destruction of the soul, which is the most severe of all of the punishments. Now, I'm just giving a brief review. The Ramban talks about the significance of the mitzvos of Pesach. And he focuses on the miracles of Pesach, that they were intended. The miracles of Pesach were intended to be teaching us a lesson. Everything that happened on Pesach in Mitzrayim, all the miracles that happened were intended to instruct. It was all instruction. And he connects it, the Ramban connects it to the mitzvah, Anochi Hashem Elokecha, I am the Lord your God. And the question he's dealing with is, in the Aseret HaDibros, why does it say, I am the Lord your God, who took you out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of slavery? And why does it not say, I am the Lord your God, who created the heaven and the earth? It's a big question that everybody asks. So the Ramban says that the statement, I am the Lord your God, teaches and commands them, sheyedu v'yaminu, that's very, very important, that they should know. And simplistically, it's translated know and believe, yaminu. But the word yaminu is not the way most people imagine it, like a simple faith. It's not talking about a simple faith. It says know. Know, and the yaminu is your belief, that is your conviction, should be based upon your knowledge. In point of fact, it's pointing in the opposite direction, that you shouldn't just accept it. That you should not just accept it. That Hashem is telling us that we should believe in His existence on the basis of the facts of history, of course, the study of nature. A person should be able to see the wisdom of Hashem as manifest in nature. But not everybody is on that level, certainly not at the outset. Our own experience, our own historical experience, gives testimony to the existence of Hashem. Ki yesh Hashem, that there is a Hashem, there is a God, this ultimate existence. V'hu Elokim lahem, and He is their God. That is, that implies two things: the existence of God. We could not conceive of the existence of anything without God. But that doesn't necessarily mean the personal relationship. There are those who maintain that there is a God, but He has nothing to do with us, other than He created the world. We're part of the world, and everything goes according to the natural order. And after that, we have no personal connection to God. We do as we please. That's not the idea of the Torah.
That is to say, now the idea of Hashem is that he's Kadmon, that God is eternal. And everything comes from him, his existence. Everything comes from him, but however, with power and with desire. That is, it's not just an automatic phenomenon. That's another crucial idea, that the world does not automatically emanate from God. That is, to the best of our ability, we don't understand God. But we do have the concept of a creation. This would be in line with what we do when you determine something, when you create something because you've given it thought and you made a decision to bring it into existence. It's not something that emanates from you contrary to your control, like your shadow is being suggested. That's the classical example. There are certain things that that we do that are involuntary, let's put it that way. Nobody chooses to breathe. Sometimes there is an autonomous nervous system. And of course, then there are things that we only do because we make a decision to do. We shouldn't think that the world just came into being because it had to come into being. That's what he's saying. And that he is a god to them, that they're obliged to serve him. Okay, that's the principle of Anochi Hashem Elokecha, that God exists, and he's also Elokecha. He's also your God. That is, you have an obligation to serve him. Then it says, who took you out of the land of Egypt? That's very, very important. Why does it say, who took you out of the land of Egypt? Here again, you see the significance of the idea of Yediyah, that we need to know God. That God did not ask us to just believe in him and faith. Just have faith. We don't have that. Because it said, Hashem says, Sichem Eretz Yisrael, who took you out of the land of Egypt. Without that, you wouldn't know, or you wouldn't have the same obligation or ability to know. Because, continuing in the Ramban, his taking them out of there indicates his existence and his desire. Because with knowledge and providence, from him did they go forth from there. So now we know about the phenomenon that God is all-knowing, that God knows everything that goes on in the world, and God is all-powerful. And that God rules the world. It also teaches about chidur. Chidush means creation. That's the key. As opposed to eternal. These are big principles that there were many philosophers that believed in God, but believed that the world is eternal. That's pretty much what he's attacking over here. What the Ramban is attacking, and on the basis of these psukim, is that view which holds that the world is eternal. That is, the miracles that God wrought were not just to establish that he exists, but what kind of a being he is, so to speak. Or, put it a different way, what is his relationship to the universe? And that he is the only being who is eternal. Chidush means creation. That the world is not eternal. The world does not have to exist. The world only exists because God decided to create it. Now, how does it prove it? Miracles prove this point. The principle of eternity of the world. If the world is eternal, then there can't be any change. That means to say that the laws of nature are what they are because that's eternal. The way the world, that view would, to make it simplistic, holds that everything is by nature the way it has to be. So nature is supreme. Let's put it that way. Nature is supreme. Nothing can overturn nature. According to that view, there's no such thing as miracles. That's what he says. In accordance with the eternity of the universe, nothing can change from its nature. It also teaches about God's capability, God's omnipotence, God's power. And that, in turn, teaches about his unity, the unity of God, that God is ultimately a completely different type of a being. We call it the unity of God. It's based upon the incorporeality of God, that God is not subject to anything physical, that God is completely a different existence. Now, the next part is, who took you out? We have the obligation. Why do we have the obligation? Because we went through the experience. That is very, very significant. That's a fundamental principle of the Seder, that having experienced the phenomenon, it creates an obligation upon you, because you went through it. But not just that you went through it. In a sense, the Egyptians also went through it. But there's a different relationship. You experienced it as a tremendous salvation. It was intended for your benefit, to free you from enslavement. So, having witnessed it and having gone through it, as an Egyptian, the knowledge is there for everybody. The knowledge is there for everybody. A very wise person will say, well, this proves the existence of God and his will. So I'll join, because it's not, no one's kicked out, no one's excluded. But it doesn't create the obligation, interestingly enough. Hashem doesn't demand that from the outsiders. But if a person was in dire straits and called out to Hashem, and Hashem answered him, then that person has a special obligation, because you're no longer the same. The fact that you experience divine providence creates an obligation upon you to affirm the underlying principles. And that's what the Ramban says. That's the meaning of mibeis avadim. That from the house, I took you out of there from the house of servitude, because they were in Egypt in the house of slavery. They were captives of Paro. And he said to them that is to say that Hashem, that they're obligated, that this Hashem, HaGadol, that this great and awesome and wondrous God should be their God, that they should serve him. Why? Because he redeemed them from the enslavement of Egypt. As it says, Avadayim, that is to say that God, so to speak, acquired them as slaves. This language is a little bit difficult because it implies that there's something of a burden. That's not the truth, that we're serving God, that God doesn't need our service. This type of terminology is misleading, unfortunately, because people take it to mean, oh, now I got to be a slave of God. And that also, what does God need what can I do for God? People have a false sense that they are serving God in the way an ordinary person would serve his master. That's not the sense. It means, since we're not perfected, it means we have to be obedient to the will of God. It's a different concept. It's very, very strange. Usually when you're obedient to somebody else's will. So usually there's some sacrifice. There's some sacrifice over here in terms of what you want to do. I have no choice. If I have a master, I have to follow his. So to the extent that I'm obedient to somebody else's will, to that extent I'm giving up my own well-being. But there's a different sense. But there is an obedience which is purely for your benefit. Let's assume that you have the best doctor who's charted a course of healthful living, which is designed to give you the best possible health. So he knows that you're not mature enough or rational enough to follow it. You're very will. So you're in conflict with your own best interest. That's the essence of man, is that he's in conflict with his own best interests. He really has to be redeemed because he's in conflict with his own best interests. So that becomes the will of God. But really it should be your will. That's what we say, that make his will your will. That you should, because his will is only for the good. The will of Hashem is only for the good. We are in conflict with our own interests. So we're struggling against our own interests. That's all sin. All sin is basically a rebellion against your own best interests. But such is the nature of man that he negates that. He negates that. He doesn't. His emotions distort the picture. And he's convinced that the things that he desires are really good for him. So as a benefit to man, it's been transferred. That whole idea. So we're saying, okay, fine, but you have to serve God. We're making it appear to him as though it's a service of God. In the real sense of service, we really can't serve God, and in that sense, it's an impossibility. Because that implies that we're doing something for God. That is the danger with all these terms. And the Ramban makes it very clear by the Khan Sipar that we can't do anything for God. And all of the commandments are for our benefit. He himself makes it clear, and yet over here he's saying that we have to serve him. Because that's the service. The service of God really means to do those things that God has decreed are in your best interest. It's really self-serving. The service of God is a very self-serving phenomenon. He continues now, the Ramban, and says, Kihu Pada, because he redeemed them from the enslavement. We can understand that, since God is relating to us not as totally rational beings. If we were totally rational, then we wouldn't need to be redeemed from slavery in order to serve him. Serving him means do that which is in our own best interests. But since we're not on that level, that is, we operate in accordance with certain powerful emotions, so then you need a compelling emotional reason to accept God as your king. And that is because Hashem delivered for you. So the fact that you experienced the power of Hashem, but not just in an abstract way, not just indifferent, but you experienced it in a positive way, that you experienced the redemption, so that creates the bond, that creates the obligation. Now, he continues and he says, and because the Holy One, blessed be He, will not do a sign and a wonder in every generation for the eyes of every Russia, or kofar, for the eyes of every heretic. That is to say, that this is not going to happen again. That God intervened in history. That's the plan of God, that the world, olam kiminhago, holech, the world operates according to its custom, according to the natural order. And God is not going to do miracles for every stubborn individual, every wicked person. So therefore, He commanded us that we should constantly make a remembrance. That is, the principle of remembering is extremely important. And a sign for that which we saw. And then we should transmit it to our children. In other words, to take something and to make it eternal. That's a very fundamental principle in the laws of the Torah. That many of the mitzvos, many, many mitzvos, are based upon memorializing, eternalizing this fundamental principle. And their children to their children. And so on. And Hashem was very strict on this matter. So now we're getting closer to the objective that when it comes to those mitzvos that are intended to memorialize that which contains fundamentals that every generation needs to know, that Hashem created the world and then about miracles and God's will, all these different things. So God is very stringent concerning these mitzvos because they memorialize those things that are the fundamentals. Just like Hashem gave the punishment of kares, of excision of the soul, for eating chametz, and for not doing the Korban Pesach. So the mitzvot that are connected to Pesach contain the most severe penalties. That's what chametz is. And He required that we should write all of these things with signs, to create the signs. All the signs, the mezuzot, all of them contain references to what took place in Egypt. And the tefillin, they shall be a sign on your hand and frontlets between your eyes. And we should place them on the doorposts of mezuzos. And we mentioned the Exodus twice a day, in the morning and the evening, in the Shema. And that we make a sukkah every year, and so on. Many, many mitzvos whose purpose is to eternalize. So that these will remain in every generation as testimony concerning the wonders, that they shouldn't be forgotten. And that there should not be an opening for a kofar, for a heretic, to rebut, to refute the belief in Hashem. He says, because someone who purchases a mezuzah with a dollar, I guess in those days it was cheaper, but even today it's not that expensive. What's expensive today is not the mezuzah, pretty much. The parchment is not, but people buy fancy cases, is what. Because they make, that's what the problem is. Instead of the real mezuzah, which is the parchment, they make an adornment out of it. So a person who purchases a mezuzah for a small sum and affixes it to his door, and his kavan, his intention, he thinks about the significance, meaning the that this is the eternal, the only thing that's eternal is the knowledge of Hashem, and all the ideas that are connected to it. So already he's acknowledging the creation and knowledge of the Creator and God's providence and also prophecy and belief in all of the corners of the Torah. Now, aside from the fact that he acknowledges the compassion of the Borei, that the compassion, he's acknowledging the compassion of the Creator is great because he, for those who do his will, that he took us out of there from slavery to freedom. So this is just a general orientation. That's why, in my opinion, the comparison, the idea of chametz, is that the eating of chametz, it has nothing to do, there's nothing in the chametz per se. It's just that there's an idea. The idea of matzah, as we read it later on in the Haggadah, we said this last week, that a person has to enunciate the reasons for eating matzah, what's special about matzah. And the Rav quotes the text of the Rambam. The Rambam added a word. It's not found in all of the Haggadahs. That is this matzah. If you can turn to the place where it says this matzah that we eat, what is the reason? Because the dough of our fathers did not have time to leaven before Hashem revealed himself, the King of Kings revealed himself to them and redeemed them. And then you quote the verse. You always have to quote the verse. So in the Rambam's version, it's Achenigla Aleim Melech Malchei Amalachim Uga'alam and redeemed them miyad, immediately. Immediately. Because the Rambam added the word immediate. And Rabbi Soloveitchik explained that that's crucial because it's an affirmation that that which took place was not natural. It did not happen in a natural manner. And if a person says that this, all the events took place in a natural manner according to the ordinary rules of history, so then he's denying the fundamental principles of Yetzias Mitzrayim, of the Exodus. Because the element over here is time. That anything which is part of a natural, that's the way nature operates. And scientists, when they study, they try to, well, that's their big thing. Everything in science is time. They deny, the more time, the more it's interesting. Evolution. That's the whole idea of evolution. That if you just posit enough time, then you can explain everything. That's a fundamental idea. That they don't want the idea of creation means that there must be a creator. Things don't just come into being. So we agree it doesn't just come into being. Because there's a creator. And the act of creation is something that happens. On the other hand, the tendency, when you're saying it's natural, any natural process requires time. This doesn't happen instantaneously. Everything in the world takes time. And politically too. People struggle for freedom. If it's a struggle for freedom, that's the way it works. It takes time. Like the Rambam pointed out, that the Torah, that's the way that God did not expect the Jews to suddenly give up everything they'd been accustomed to and to take on a new system. That's why he explains the reason for sacrifices. That's how God relates to us in the framework of the natural order. God doesn't just transform us. But when God manifested himself, he manifested himself in a way which is contrary to the natural. That is, immediately. It doesn't happen that way. That 1 minute, it doesn't happen with that speed, with that immediacy. I have the question, I've asked the question many times, is that why were the Jews not prepared? It says that they didn't have time to prepare provisions. Well, didn't they know? Moshe had told them to prepare and take the Korban Pesach, and that they would this night, don't leave your houses this night. I mean, they knew that something big was happening. So why weren't they prepared? Because they didn't know the exact moment. That they didn't know. They just knew, they thought that this will be the final blow and the last phase. But no one knows exactly. But even the Jews themselves. You're never supposed to get hooked on these kinds of things. On Mashiach. Mashiach is coming now. We know when he's coming. We don't know. We don't know. It's always, we're always in a state of anticipation. But not in a state that we get carried away with the notion and that we project onto a certain individual or a certain time. That's mystical kind of thinking. So they didn't know. Clearly they knew that they were in the Messianic era. I mean, that their redemption, their time of redemption. But when it happened, it was sudden and they were surprised. So the idea of chametz, the Torah then shows the antithesis. The antithesis of matzah is chametz. Intellectually speaking. Intellectually, it represents the natural order. So just like the malacha on Shabbos, if a person does work on Shabbos, it's not that this is a terrible thing to put on a light, per se, but rather, you're denying the oath. You're negating the oath. The refraining from work is an affirmation of a principle that a person is supposed to positively desist from labor. Because if you're engaged in labor, you're saying that every day is the same. There's nothing different. There's nothing unique. Thus, you're denying the creation. That's what's so serious about Shabbos. The same thing is true over here. That the eating of the matzah is an affirmation of the idea of the matzah. That's why you must read that paragraph. If you don't read the paragraph, what are you doing? There's no matzah. It has no significance for you. And contrarily, the significance of the matzah has to do with the negation of chametz. You have to negate the chametz. That could be why there's a mitzvah of tishbos, to remove yourself mentally. To remove yourself mentally from the desire for a chametz. It's an object that in this context has no value for you because it reflects false ideas. In this situation, in this context, it reflects false ideas. So that's why the idea of the leavening is time. It represents that idea. It's a natural process, and what you're basically saying is that everything happens because of the natural order. In fact, that very view that's the whole idea of eternity of the world is also, it's all natural. The eternity of the world came into being because it's all natural. So everything is the natural order. There's nothing beyond the natural order. That's the significance. Now bear in mind that we've already made this point that you can't have matzah if you still have chametz. You've got to get rid of the chametz. You've got to nullify the chametz. Because the point of it is not just to eat matzah. If a person eats matzah on Pesach and he eats chametz and he eats matzah, then that's the question. Ordinarily, tonight we only eat matzah, means that matzah must come to the forefront. In order for this to matzah to have this theme, it means that it's the only bread that we can eat. If you could eat chametz too, it wouldn't have it. So what? So you're having this, you're having that. It doesn't mean anything. By affirming that this is, we've changed our lifestyle. We make a significant change in our lifestyle. As I said, on Sukkot you make a change in terms of the habitation to affirm certain ideas. It's got to be, in order for a theme to be established, it's got to be of significance. It can't just be a minimalistic act, which doesn't mean anything. It's got to be significant. And as we explained, refraining from bread for the entire week is a very significant change. We made that point that to a lot of people, by the end of Pesach, they're going antsy already. They have to get their chametz. They're planning to go to the pizza shop right after a treat because they're missing something. That's very important. Because it's only as a result of that you're affirming something. Otherwise, you wouldn't notice it. If you could eat chametz all week long, you wouldn't notice the matzah. You wouldn't pay attention to the matzah. It wouldn't make an impact upon you. You wouldn't consider the ideas. That, I think, is the reason for the severity. the severity of the prohibitions surrounding chametz. In order to negate those false ideas and to establish the significance of the matzah. So that's the idea, the difference between chametz and matzah.